Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson in Greenville, South Carolina, and joined by my co-host Matt Fortuna in Chicago, Illinois, to talk a little bit about Notre Dame's 31-23 loss to Clemson. I don't think that Notre Dame losing is a shock. You, in fact, Matt, predicted Notre Dame to lose. And I don't know why I didn't see... I was a little leery of the offense. I guess I think I picked them to win like 24-17, like kind of a muck it around type game, which you frankly cannot play when you throw a pick six and have a muff punt. But I mean, it ends Notre Dame's New Year's Six hopes. They're dropped to 7-3 on the season. Marcus Freeman 16-8 overall as a head coach. And this felt like one of those games where, I mean, we all covered losses where it's like, all right, you got to go back to the drawing board. Like, in a game plan point of view, this one felt much bigger and deeper than that. Or it should feel that way if you're Marcus Freeman, about what the heck are you offensively? Because Notre Dame had absolutely one path to victory against Clemson. And with Sam Hartman, that is not even close to good enough.
Yeah, it takes a lot to make me look smart and right, but Notre Dame did it to the nth degree today, because I didn't see it turning into the meltdown that it, you know, certainly looked like it was going to become in the first half. It's extremely disappointing, Pete. I don't know how else to put it. Like, it's pretty blunt. Like, if you're in the pass-fail, you know, evaluation, as I think a lot of people are, rightly or wrongly, like, the season's a failure. There's nothing left to play for. New Year's Six is off the table. You had the worst Clemson team of the last decade just stomp you on their place at 4-4. You had the worst, and Ohio State's undefeated. They might win it all this year. They're still one of the handful of teams that are eligible too, but you had the most vulnerable Ohio State team of the last decade, at least on the ropes, and you couldn't close the door. And you've got who was supposed to be the best quarterback since Brady Quinn, who, you know, has not looked the part. And, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of blame to go around on offense, from the coaching to the receivers to the subpar line play to pretty much everyone not named Audric Estime or Mitchell Evans. But it's very, very disappointing. You know, this is more than just a trend, at least on the road. This is who they are. I mean, outside of the NC State game, which, you know, we could say if not for the rain delay or whatever, because they didn't look all that sharp to begin that game either. This is a team that gets on an opponent's field, whether it's Duke, Louisville, or today, and you just don't know what the hell you're going to get. They look lost. They look confused. And this is not a team, and we knew this coming in, but like, this is not a team built to come back. They fall behind 18 points to Clemson. And, you know, I know the final score would indicate otherwise, but there wasn't a whole lot you saw even after that SMA touchdown in the second half, even after Clemson's offense. I mean, I think you tweeted this, like, Notre Dame needed Cabe Klubnik to really make some bad decisions and turn the ball over to win this game. And that's not a path to victory.
So close.
He did, no, but like, that's not, all right, well, this guy's like, going to screw up like he always does. No, like, that's not.
Yeah,
Cabe Klubnik was for Clemson this year what Drew Pine was for Notre Dame against Clemson last year. And
it shouldn't be a path. Like, it almost was a path to victory, but it's not. It's a path to victory, but it's not a strategy.
No, exactly.
Like, that's not a strategy to play that way. And like, no, Clemson tried to keep Notre Dame in the game as much as humanly possible, but after Hartman's touchdown run there, these are the final drives for Notre Dame. They take over at their own 4. And it's 3 plays, 2 yards. Take over their own 7. 4 plays, 23 yards. Take over their own 14. 3 plays, -4 yards. Take over their own 7. 3 plays, 3 yards. Take over their own 6. 5 plays, 16 yards. Take over their own 22. 6 plays, 22 yards. That ends the game effectively for Notre Dame. They never crossed midfield on 6 drives. When you lose by a score, and Marcus Freeman post game said a lot of interesting stuff. But when he talked about how, you know, look, you got a pick six and a muff punt, that's 10 points, you lose by 8. Like, that's accurate, but not a fair description of what happened, because your defense essentially had a pick six via Xavier Watts. He just went out at the 2-yard line. So it wasn't just 2 plays. It was the entire game plan offensively. You know, I think that there was a point in the season where, like, is Notre Dame wasting Sam Hartman, and I think they might be wasting Al Golden. I mean, this is like their defense played well enough to win today. Like, but what Notre Dame needed them was to be almost perfect, and that is a ridiculous thing to ask of any defense. Phil Maffa, their backup running back, mind you, 36 carries, 182 yards, 2 touchdowns. He had the long 41-yard run after Notre Dame special teams were a mess today. Kind of a line drive punt, got a big return. And they didn't fit the run right on the very next play, and it went for the score. But there were a lot of like uncharacteristic performances from Notre Dame. Like, you don't see Howard Cross miss a tackle. You don't see Jack Kaiser miss tackles. I think Cam Hart had a PI. You don't see that stuff. You know, Chris Tyree muffed punt. Like, has he made some questionable decisions? Sure. But he also brought one back next week. Right. So you don't see that a whole lot. But we have seen over and over is that Notre Dame's pass game is broken. They don't push the ball vertically. Their wide receiver position, 16 targets, 8 catches, 96 yards today. Notre Dame's in a spot where losing Mitchell Evans has been a devastating blow to the pass game. And like, that's not, for all the youth that they have out there and injuries that they have out there, everybody else has the same problems. They figure out a way to push the ball vertically to have a functional pass game. Notre Dame seems like they can't do it right now.
No, and you mentioned this. Sam Hartman threw a touchdown pass in each of his final 31 games at Wake Forest.
And I think his first three at Notre Dame, maybe four?
At least three. No, at least four.
I think maybe
he didn't have one in Ohio State, right?
Yeah, I don't know if he had one against Central Michigan. I should have looked that up before this podcast started. But it was a really long streak. And now he's had goose egg in three of the last five.
Yeah. Yeah, he's complete. Yeah, touchdown pass in two of the last five. You also had his road stats this year in the past three road games. 2 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, 9 sacks, 50% completion. Again, there's a lot of blame to go around. And Sam Hartman, you know, God bless him, got up there and took the bullets and didn't, you know, shy away from, you know, what happened out there on the field today. But, you know, Marcus Freeman's comments weren't all that inspiring either, right? Talking about the quarterback getting rattled after a pick six.
That was spooked. That was bad.
You have a 24-year-old quarterback for a reason, because you don't get spooked. You've seen it all.
He's seen it all. He's actually seen it all at Clemson.
Like,
you think about watching Sam Hartman versus Clemson last year and thinking like, wow, if Notre Dame could get a quarterback like that, that would change everything. And they got that very same quarterback.
He had receivers there. He does not have the beard at all.
No, not even close. I mean, you've been banging that drum for a minute here. Like, that
Aubrey Gastman, Chris Tyree, and Jordan Faison, a walk-on. Very top three pass catchers today.
Yeah, it just, they don't have anything at that position right now. They really haven't had a lot at that position all season. And now with Jaden Thomas missing, he didn't play today at all. Has really been, you know, had a season altering hamstring injury. Now Mitchell Evans is out too. It's just like, they're not getting anything offensively right now. And I don't know where the most of the blame lies, if it's Hartman, if it's Freeman, if it's Jared Parker. But I mean, ultimately I think probably Jared Parker's the one that's going to have to eat this. This is sort of where today's game, I think, gets into a much bigger picture than just like, oh, if we just made this play here or there. It's who are you offensively? You don't know. What you do offensively doesn't work. And it felt more like the Louisville game, where what are they trying to do? How, like, is Parker able to get from play A to play B to play C and have it feel like it's connected? And you don't get that feeling at all watching Notre Dame. I mean, their offense today was give the ball to Audric Estime. Sam Hartman makes something out of nothing, where that is a scramble. They had a nice sort of designed run, but like the touchdown was a scramble. Even the 20-yarder he had to Chris Tyree, I think it was in the second quarter, was kind of a scramble drill, throw it up and hope kind of thing. They throw sort of jump balls along the sideline. I don't think I've seen a receiver make a play on those. They don't they just don't do anything at wide receiver right now. And that is leaving Sam Hartman with no options. He, you know, Hartman said, like, I miss guys who are open. There were a few instances of guys getting open, but like, that shouldn't be like a big deal. Like, receivers run open in college football. If you're watching other games today, including one going on right now as you record, it's okay for, like, receivers get open. Like, that's what they're supposed to do. Notre Dame's just don't get open enough.
No, and, you know, I wondered coming into, like, this morning as the Clemson's injury report comes out, and it's even longer than we imagined it would be. As I look back at Notre Dame's last two games on paper, it's, well, 58 points last week against Pitt, 48 the week before against USC. Am I being a little too harsh on this offense? At the end of the day, it's about scoring points, however you can, even if those come sometimes from special teams or from defense.
Yeah.
But you go back to the way they play at home versus the way they play on the road. And, I mean, you mentioned it looks at times like their plan is Sam Hartman makes something out of nothing and rely on Audric Esme. Well, that's how they beat Duke, which outside of NC State is their only road win this year.
Again, on the road,
They looked completely lost against Louisville. They looked lost in the first half today. And, you know, as you were reciting Notre Dame's second half drive chart, I'm looking at that with you in unison. And I'm also looking at Clemson's, which was even worse. I mean, again, the last one, two, three, four, five, the last seven drives for Clemson, punt, 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 fumble downs. And
did you see where those drives started? Look at Clemson's last seven drives, where six of them started.
It's
Notre Dame territory.
Like, Clemson was
totally wild.
Clemson did not play a great game by any stretch of imagination. Cade Klubnik was 13 of 26 for 109 yards, one touchdown, one INT. Notre Dame outgained them 329 to 285.
Yeah. Clemson as well, if not three. It was very strange.
Clemson's top receiver, Bo Collins, three catches, 37 yards. It's hard to wrap your arms around this one. It really is. And you know, this has become a habit with the offense. This has become a theme with the offense. And, you know, this was a critical game because I think the narrative around this program and around Marcus Freeman's tenure as a head coach completely changes if you go 10-2 and get into a major bowl game. It just does. Yeah. Now you've got a bye week, so you've got an extra week to stew on this.
You don't even have to win that bowl game.
No, you don't. Nice if you did, but you don't. Like, getting there is kind of the biggest accomplishment is for the purposes of evaluating the season. Well, Wake and Stanford, again, who the hell knows what happened in those two games? Notre Dame should win them, but you know, crazier things have happened already this season. I thought this was a very important. Well, this game was important because, again, 10 wins, I think, shows substantial progress in a way that 9-3 doesn't, especially when you look at the way they lost some of the games, two of them, which, again, on paper, you look at this and say, hey, they had a chance to win, and they certainly did, but this was a team that came unprepared and did not have answers on offense for much of the afternoon. Same with Louisville. And, you know, we don't need to go down the road of, man, what a disaster the last offense coordinator search was. And like, I'm even hesitant to blame all this on Jared Parker, because I think this was people's fear when they went the route they did with that, because this is what was going to happen. And we're seeing it play out in real time. And it obviously hurts to see a lot more in real time. But, you know, you wrote this in real time, like, Marcus Freeman needs the administration to have his back, and he needs to be able to come to them and say, this is what I need. It's a hell of a lot easier to do that when you won 10 games and you're recruiting well than it is when, you know, there are times where you look lost, and they looked lost today, and they don't seem to have answers. And it's been a very volatile 2-year stretch here where they look great 1 week and then they look like they don't know what the hell they're doing the next week. And that's not supposed to happen with a veteran team like this. It's not supposed to happen when you have a quarterback, you know, who's been there and done that the way Sam Hartman has. And it's not supposed to happen when you've got a defense as good as they've played so far. And again, defense today reminded me a little bit of the Louisville game where, like, look, they're really, really good. They're surpassing every reasonable expectation I had for them preseason. But this isn't a vintage Alabama or LSU defense that's going to shut you out from start to finish. Like, you put them in enough compromising positions, they're going to tap out eventually. And I would argue that you can make argument they didn't even do that today, but they gave up 31 points. And
we talked about the second half. Like,
31 was enough because, again, you go down 24-6, you watch that game, you think Clemson's beatable, but this Notre Dame offense isn't going to do it. Like, where's that going to come from?
No,
it just was a very uninspired, much like Louisville, even when they got it within whatever it was, 13 at the end there. It's like, okay, like they got a garbage time touchdown and onside kick. Like there's nothing here that they're doing where I'm like, all right, yeah, you're building something here. You're getting better throughout the course of the game. It's very, very frustrating to watch. And they keep coming back to the same problems, right? We talked about receivers last year. It's receivers again this year. I know there are some injuries there, but again, the depth should not be as poor as it is. The quality of play should not be as poor as it is. And when you've got a quarterback as talented as Sam Hartman is, that should be enough to meet in the middle somewhere there. And it's just, it's incredibly frustrating to watch this offense go out there and look as clueless as they have their last couple of road games.
Yeah, it's because I thought the thing that would change with Sam Hartman is like Notre Dame would win a few games because of their quarterback play.
Not
in spite of it or not because the quarterback was just there while it was happening. Like Cade Klubnik won today because he just happened to be on the field. He didn't do anything to win.
Notre Dame beat Duke because of Sam Hartman at the end. Now you can argue about the first three quarters,
sure,
good and bad, but that's one game you can look at and say, our quarterback won us the game.
Yeah, gutted it out at the end.
Everything else
has just not been there. And the fact that Notre Dame is stuck in a position where they can only win one way is really really disturbing. If you're Marcus Freeman right now, like they can't play any other way than how they're playing right now. I would contend, like, and I think you're touching on this a little bit, like the immaturity of these performances for a veteran team does not make a lot of sense to me. I don't know if this is a trend of the Freeman era, but like they are an incredibly volatile team. The highs have been very high and the lows are today, or they're Louisville or they're Stanford. They just are not reliable in any way. Like I don't know what to put that down to, but you just like, they are a long way from like Brian Kelly. I get it. It was boring. You knew what you're going to get every week, but those were 10 wins every week. Like you're getting a 10-2 team, sometimes 11-1, and they got a couple, they got a 12-0 in there too. This team, I just feel like almost every game is losable. And if they got it together, almost every game, especially at home, maybe only at home, is winnable. I think maybe a better way to phrase that is like they could lose every road game they play. Every single one.
I mean, they lost at home to Stanford and Marshall last year, and I know it's a different team, but like nothing's off the table. No, they should beat Wake, but like, you know, Mitch Griffiths, who, you know, made a terrible mistake at down the stretch Thursday at Duke, he also completed 12 of his first 12 passes and gave Wake, albeit against a depleted Duke team, a real chance to win at the end there. Like Wake should have beat Duke. And again, I know the Duke team that played Thursday is not the Duke team that played Notre Dame a couple months ago, but like,
nor is the Duke crowd that showed up Thursday, the Duke crowd that showed up when Notre
Dame. Hey, it's basketball season, baby. Yeah. United Center next week, Michigan State. Yeah. It's just, look, they're capable of losing any team, right? Like Wake's not a bad football team. Again, they're not great by any stretch of imagination. It's one of the worst Wake teams, especially without Hartman, but can't take them for granted. And you know, they'll say all the right things about Sam Hartman, but you know, they want to beat him.
They thought
he was done like anyone else would. Stanford. I mean, they're, you know, I think Troy Taylor's a hell of a football coach. They damn near beat a possibly playoff bound Washington team last week. They had a crazy comeback against Colorado in the second half a couple weeks ago. And may I remind you, they beat Notre Dame last year at Notre Dame. So I'll pick Notre Dame to win the last two games because, you know, it'd be pretty disastrous if they didn't win either of them. But again, what's 9-3 get you? Does that show the substantial progress that you need to see? And
no,
you know, I don't know what you, it's going to be interesting, right? Like Jack Swarbrick's still around. From my understanding, he'll probably stay around through basketball season. So any like decisions as far as staffing and stuff, you'll be making in concert with him and presumably Pete Bavakwa as well, who's been, you know, around in the shadows, so to speak. But, you know, you knew you had to stomach some growing pains with a first-time head coach, and it wouldn't be fair to write him off after some bad performances, even in year two. But you know, I am curious about the direction and future of this program and you know, who's ultimately going to be making the critical decisions that need to be made at the end of the season. Like, not this staff in its entirety will not be back, whether that's Al Golden for the NFL, whether it's Jared Pargram fired, whatever. How are you going to run your search? Who's going to be running your search? Are you going to actually get the buyout money right this time? Like, Sean Lewis, who, you know, they had interest in last time, is now all of a sudden available. Do you go back to that? Well, I don't know. Like, you know, Brian Ferentz, you're not going to hire him, but programs have made OC changes already this season. Notre Dame needs to do that now.
Okay. I thought you were saying Notre Dame was going to get Brian Ferentz for a second. Right. I just like easy.
Hey, what are you going to do? Our friend Paul Vermeister got to announce that one today. I'm Peacock, so a lot of people had to pay to watch that.
Yeah.
It's going to be a hot market for OCs.
Yes.
What are you going to do to attract a good guy here if you go in that direction?
I would say, like, to your point about, is it easier to ask for stuff when you're 10-2 than when you're 9-3? I mean, I could see that being cut both ways, right? Like, holy crap, I need an Al Golden of offense. And like, you saw the reasons why, Jack and Pete, like that should be like, Marcus shouldn't have to make a very compelling pitch.
He shouldn't, but like, again, I don't know what the exact conversations were last time, but what happened last time should not happen at Notre Dame ever.
No.
And it cannot happen again. And, you know, again, I couldn't tell you a good reason why it happened, but if you got a coach who's feeling himself a little bit and just took this team to a great season and a great finish, he's definitely going to have a little more oomph to him to go up to his boss and say, hey, this is what I need.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Ryan Day's leaving for the NFL. I'm out of here. I'm going to Ohio State. Again, I'm talking like, you know, crazy hypotheticals here, but like, you need leverage in these situations.
And but you shouldn't. Oh,
you shouldn't, but you know, how do we get where we are now?
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. I would hope that everyone at Notre Dame, if there's a change at OC, I would hope that everyone at Notre Dame would look at what happened last January and was like, all right, let's not do that again.
And to tamp down the temperature here in the masses, from my understanding, they went deep into the bank to break Micah Shrewsbury's buyout and to get him from Penn State and go to Notre Dame in a way that I don't know if they wouldn't. Like, I feel like in some ways they may have overcompensated because they aired so bad with football the last time and they didn't want to make the same mistake twice.
There is a belief.
And that was for basketball.
I mean, you talk to some people around Notre Dame and that there is a thought of that. That's not just something you're throwing out there.
No, I mean, they paid a lot of money to get him. And again, it's not my money. I don't care. But like, and it's not the fans' money. They don't care, nor should they. But, you know, that was for basketball, which doesn't really bring in a whole lot of money at Notre Dame the way football does.
Yeah.
So,
the money should, like, point being, the money should be there, but you have to have a strategy to spend it. They didn't have a strategy to spend it last year. So I don't know. I don't know what Notre Dame will do. After today, I have a very difficult time seeing Marcus not doing something on the offensive side of the ball. But like, they have to find somebody like Al Golden to run the offense. Somebody who has answers when stuff is messed up. Because either you're going to have another transfer quarterback next year who you're going to have to get up to speed like real, real quick.
Well, if it's a new OC, I mean, they'll all be on the same page. It's far as same learning curve, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm just like, I don't know. You're going to need to have somebody who's a great teacher, but then also knows how to like dig himself out of a hole. Like, I do think that's one of the great mysteries of this offense is like when things go bad, they just stay bad. With the exception of the NC State rain delay, like it's just like when things get off the tracks, they're off the tracks. You need somebody to get them back on.
One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Rollback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Rollback on Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Rollback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Rollback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Rollback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
Matt, what have you always said is my biggest weakness on fall Saturdays?
Well, Pete, I'd say your hair, but who am I to talk? Let's go with your wardrobe.
Harsh but fair.
ESQ outfits over 400 professional athletes, celebrities, and Irish players on game day with bespoke clothing that elevates their game off the field. ESQ sculpts every garment with precision, helping you look your best for work, weddings, celebrations, or in your case, Pete, the press box.
Listeners of The Independent can get 15% off their first online order by using the code IND15 at checkout. That's IND15, or visit them at their Chicago showroom for a full custom look. Head to esqclothing.com to create your perfect fit.
Again, decisions will be made when they're made, but there's two games left in the season, so I don't think we're jumping the gun to like look ahead right now.
No.
Like, if you're going to move on, you need to make that clear right after the Stanford game, because you're going on the recruiting trail and you're going to be hiring a new guy, and everyone else is going to be in the coaching market for head coaches and staffs and OCs and you name it. And you're going to want an OC, and you're going to probably want that OC to bring in his quarterback, or not, whether it's his quarterback, bring in a quarterback that he wants.
Yeah.
I don't think you can do it separately the way it kind of was done last year. And again, that was due to circumstance, Tommy Rees leaving kind of came out of nowhere, right, as far as when it did in the calendar. So I just think, this isn't something like, hey, when the season's over, we're going to evaluate it. I know you got to say that publicly, but like, there's two games left in the season. Forget the bowl game. Like, you're not keeping a guy you're going to fire on.
Bowl game is not a tiebreaker of any kind of consequence. Like, the season will be complete when Notre Dame finishes the Stanford game, and then there will be a bowl game, but that's like a coda to the season itself. That's like, right, that's an epilogue, not, that doesn't influence how you felt about the book.
Correct. And so I'm sure they're going to at least try to go to the portal for a quarterback. It'd be stupid not to, just because you don't know what you have. And this is college football in the year 2023. And for as bad as Sam Hartman looked today, he brought a lot of good to them this season, both on and off the field. So I hate that we're like already having that conversation here on November 4th, but part of that's
November 4th.
There's two games left, right? I mean, it's getting late early. Michigan State had senior day today. Like, it is very late in the college football calendar. It's crazy that there haven't been any head coach firings anywhere around the country, because last year at this time there were like seven. But that's going to happen eventually elsewhere. And there's going to be free agency, so to speak, to go out and get assistant coaches. And again, we may be having this conversation about the DC if Al Golden gets an opportunity here, like elsewhere. And if it's elsewhere, it's probably going to be in the NFL.
Yeah.
That one's probably not going to happen until January.
Yeah. That seems a little more straightforward based on like, what Freeman said about Mike Mickens, but you can't, like, again, it's a first time coordinator, a little different because your head coach is also a former defensive coordinator than what you're doing offensively. But that seems like a much easier problem to solve than what you're doing offensively. And that's like, it's another thing. It just blows my mind about the offense. It's like, Jared Parker actually has been an OC before. Joe Rudolph has been an OC before. Gino Gadulli has been an OC before. Like, in the spirit of collaboration, which is, something that Marcus Freeman talks about a lot about and all the coaches talk about, like, if you put your heads together, I'm just confused why this is what the output is.
Right.
Like, the input is I think Notre Dame has talented coaches with good input, but the output is not working. So that's got to be some soul searching for Freeman. I know that Al Golden talks about collaboration on defense, but that dude is the boss. And I don't know if Notre Dame has like the boss on offense right now. Maybe that's what they need. I don't know. I think there's something there. I'm not sure. I feel like I'm sort of grasping at straws about like what could make the offense work in a way that it's not now.
We don't have all the answers. A lot of people don't have all the answers. Clemson fans were having this exact same discussion last year. They went out and hired the Broyles Award winner. They killed off one of their own to get him.
Yeah.
And they're worse.
Yeah.
And they've got a five-star quarterback who, now, again, I think you recruit as well at that position as Clemson historically has. You can stomach whiffing on a Cabe Klubnik because you've had a Trevor Lawrence and a Deshaun Watson, and you've had success at that position. Mm-hmm. Less so at Notre Dame, but again, there's no sure thing here. There's no sure path to victory. There are ways, as we've seen, that will probably indicate when it won't be successful from very early on through process and through, you know, signs early in the season and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing that unfold right now, and that just can't happen again. If Marcus Freeman wants to be around here for the next decade or so.
Yeah. Cause I mean, he certainly gets a mulligan on the OC hire, right?
He should.
You don't get a second one.
No. Now again, look, we're talking about a possible 9-3 team here, not 4-8. I don't want to just make it sound like the building's burning right now, but it's just, I'll be very fascinated by the process with all of this because they got caught with their pants down last year, and this year, like, that can't happen. Like, we're talking about it on November 4th. Me and you were talking about it. Other podcasts elsewhere are talking about it. Every fan of Notre Dame football is talking about it. And I'm sure the smart people in that building, whether they're saying out loud or not, are doing their due diligence and, you know, not looking ahead, but, you know, making sure that all their ducks are in a row come November 25th at this time when the regular season is over.
Yeah, you have to be ready to move and have like all your ammunition figured out. I get it. Notre Dame had to replace its offensive coordinator last year. It didn't want to. Now it's got a little bit more of a choice about what it wants to do, which in theory should put it in more control of the situation. Because like Reese left, that was
almost February. It was almost February.
Yeah, that was a difficult time. But and yet,
Bill O'Brien left for the Patriots, so that was the delay, like the NFL calendar.
And like for how late it was, like you still had, you know, Colin Klein, Andy Ludwig, Jared Parker, Sean Lewis. Like, it's not like they were struggling to find people who were interested in the job.
It's a desirable job, Pete. I think everything in Notre Dame is a desirable job. I don't think, you know, if you give Sam Hartman a dose of truth here, I mean, even on his worst day, I think he's going to say, I'm glad I came to Notre Dame and got to experience this. And you know, I'm having a blast in my sixth year of college, regardless of whether it went on the field the way everyone hoped it would. Like, it's a desirable job. I mean, Brady Quinn's still a god at this place for going 9-3. God bless him. But like you do the right thing here. You treat people the right way and you don't screw up too much. Like, this place will take you very, very far. And I think a lot of smart people understand that. And that's why it's such an attractive place to work.
Yeah. Mike Elko, Clark Lee.
Yes.
Marcus Freeman. Yes. Like, maybe Al Golden in the near future.
Mike Sanford.
Tommy Reese. Mike Sanford. Bob Diaco.
We can go.
If you're a coordinator at Notre Dame, you're a head coach. If you are just pretty good. It's a place that can make your career. And I do believe this, that
Matt LaFleur, by the way, sorry, Matt, as long as we're going on. Yeah.
If you do it well here, you also get to work with, I think, players that are fairly low maintenance,
and the staff, like Brian, for all the outward anger and rep Brian Kelly had, most people enjoyed working for him because he was a fairly hands-off boss, but talking to that guy, that building, even after some down times this year, guys on staff, man, Marcus is awesome to work for.
Yeah.
And they mean it. Like, they're not just saying that, you know, privately to me for recruiting purposes. Like, they mean it. And like, he's pretty much what you see, what you get kind of guy.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that he will take a very shrewd look at his staff after the season. That might not be, I don't think he will have a hard time making the hard decision. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Like, he might not enjoy it. I'm not saying he's going to revel in it, but I don't think he will hesitate. Let me put it this way. I don't think he'll hesitate to make very hard decisions after this season.
I mean, think back to when Brian Kelly's here and he didn't have to make a whole lot of changes outside of after 2016, which again, 4-8, that's like the disaster of all disasters from a record standpoint.
Basically, I believe he went 6.5 seasons before firing a coach, if If I'm not mistaken, I think BVG after game four of 2016 was the first time he jettisoned a coach. Like officially, that was obvious. That was obvious.
But like how many times would we hear the following spring or winter, whenever any of them would speak, like after every season, like Jack Swarbrick and I sat down and did a full, you know, kind of evaluation and whatnot, an audit of our program. Like, I assume that's still the case with Marcus Freeman. I assume that'll still be the case this year, even if Jack Swarbrick will not be the athletic director in time for the 2024 football season. I'm just curious how that process will play out as far as just the number of cooks in the kitchen, so to speak, and you know, how they get from point A to point B together.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would just be, I mean, Bavakwa would be there in a listening capacity. I don't know if he would have advice in the situation, but you would hope that the administration would have. I don't think it's a question of like finding the money.
No.
Because I think they've always had it.
They pay assistants well. Yeah. Even, like, look, again, the process is what was frustrating with last time around. 2.8 for a buyout for an assistant coach is a shitload of money.
Yeah, that's like a huge number.
I understand, like, you know, theoretically, a place like Notre Dame where money grows on trees, they could afford it. I get that. But that's like a lot of money. The process of not realizing that until too late was what ultimately, you know,
right,
got people so angry. So
it has to be a much more professional buttoned up search than what it was last year.
They pay here. I don't get it twisted. They pay.
That I think if you're a fan listening to this podcast and thinking like, well, Notre Dame can't afford, like, no, they can afford. They can afford to get a.
They were paying BBG a million before coordinators were regularly making a million.
Right. Yeah, they can do that part of it. It's the recruitment of it. It's the negotiation of it. It's the closing of it. That was the issue last year. That's all like a next. That's all a December podcast, and I'm sure it'll be many podcasts. Like, is there the? I think we get this to. Every college team gets to this point in the season. Would you play any younger guys? Would you make any significant personnel changes in the final 2 weeks of the regular season for the sake of next season?
What would your options there be? You'd have to look at defense, which is playing well, and I wouldn't want to shake that up. Offensively, they're all playing.
You're
playing five running backs. You have what you have.
Yeah, you can't do anything else there. I don't know if there's a change at tight end that you could make that would make any sense whatsoever. I think it's very much like on the margins. If you're going to make a change, like, would you play Jordan Faison more reps? Probably.
Sure. Yeah.
Probably would. Is that going to solve everything? No, it's definitely not. We're not to the point where you want to be, well, let's see what Steve Angeli has, or you're not doing that. Maybe there's more reps for Andrew Kristolfik if the ankle injury isn't too bad. Maybe there's reps for Billy Shroth. Like, these are all like fine margins for Notre Dame. Like, it's not going to make a huge difference in what the team is next year. But I don't think there's a lot of solutions out there in the near term in terms of the players.
As Brian Kelly would always say, this is who we got. It's not the NFL. Yeah. There's no free agency, at least in season.
They've got who they got.
And frankly, it's still, with the exception of wide receivers, which has been subpar talent-wise for a while now, I still think I don't think anyone will look at this football team and say, oh, this is an undefeated playoff football team.
Right? No.
But... you watch every game this year and you look at the sides and the talent on each side, they should have at least one more win than they have right now, whether that was today, whether that was Louisville, whether it was Ohio State, which was, you know, in retrospect, seeing the way both those seasons have gone, it's like, man, like, they almost beat those guys, but like they almost did and they should have. Like, that was the time to get them. And Rutgers almost got Ohio State today.
Yeah.
So
it just is. Yeah. Cause it, I mean, when you put it that way, it is kind of, you do get to a point where, like, all right, they should have finished 10-2 and they're going to finish 9-3. Let's just give them Wake Forest and Stanford for the sake of this discussion. It's a one win difference. And yet the difference feels way more than one win, does it not?
Yes. Because that one win is the difference between playing in Orlando in a second tier bowl and playing on the biggest non-playoff stage there is. And one that you at least say as you go into next year, as you go into year three of the Freeman era, hey, we just finished the 2023 as a top 12 team. For all intents and purposes, we have a playoff ready team going into the playoff era, the 12 team playoff era next year. You can't say that anymore.
And yeah, that's in some ways, I think that today probably would have hurt a lot more if it happened next year.
Right.
Because then you officially would be out of the playoff with a roster that was good enough to make it. Like this, Notre Dame has a 12 team playoff defense, no question.
Yep.
They don't, they're not even close on offense. You know, special teams has been up the last couple of weeks. They were very down today. Not just the turnover, but a lot of lost yardage and change of possession. So that's difficult. But yeah, it's just like the difference between, you can say it's like a one win difference, but it's the difference between saying your program is making progress and your program is not.
Well, and we could say it's only a one win difference, but we were having this conversation after Louisville, right? Oh, if one win. Well, what's one win? Well, it's the difference between saying, hey, we could have been in the playoff if we just beat Ohio State and didn't lose by three versus now it's like, all right, now we're only playing for a New Year's Six game versus now we're not even playing for, like, I just, three losses. Like, that's, we could talk about the margin for error and how thin it is. Three losses at the end of the day is three losses. And if you want to play the what if game, you could look at the Duke game just as easily as well. So,
yeah, that is, I think you have to take that into consideration when you're talking about like what could have been or should have been, like, because really it's like, if you're going to say the Ohio State been could have been a win, the Duke game probably, Ohio State should have been a win, but Duke probably should have been a loss. And then you're just, you're back exactly where you are right now. In some ways I think that would be worse.
And I don't, it would have been worse. They followed Ohio State win with a Duke loss. That would have been worse.
We went 5-0 to 7-3. That would have been tough.
Yes. You said you don't know where the answers come from on offense. And like, I still look at that roster outside of receivers, outside of ball, and think they should just be playing so much better than they are. Like, that should still be a very good offensive line. The running backs are awesome as a collective group, and Audric Esme is awesome on his own. Sam Hartman has not played particularly well on the road, but he's still like a better quarterback than not, generally speaking. I'm having a hard time pinpointing. You know, it's not as simple as, oh, it was players. No, it was coaches. But like, I have a hard time looking at the body of work and looking at today's game and pinpointing where, you know, what exactly is missing, other than the fact that something clearly is missing there, because it keeps happening.
I mean, even go, this will be a really weird example because these series both ended with picks, but I think about the way the Pittsburgh game started last week, where they had a quick firing pass first game plan because Pittsburgh was daring them to do it. And they did a really nice job of it. And I realize saying, but the picks is kind of a stupid thing to say, but like, there's functional offense there. And where was that today? It just didn't feel like there was functional offense out there. That I think is probably the most distressing thing to me as you look at that side of the ball. I don't know what the plan is. They're 3 of 13 on third down. There's no vertical pass game. Sam Hartman has more than enough ability to like pick you apart short at home. That should be the case here. And it's like, I get back to like, I was listening to some players, like Howard Cross doesn't miss that tackle. Jabron Payne doesn't miss that blitz pickup. Zeke Correll sometimes gets walked back, but probably not like that. Chris Tyree with the punt. Like, there were players today that usually play well that didn't. Sam Hartman was a mystery to me because he has not played well on the road. But ultimately, I think it comes back to the game plan offensively and what they're trying to do, because I just,
well, because you just mentioned a lot of things. Like, if it was one player, hey, he had a bad game. You just mentioned four.
Yeah, I mean, they had a bunch of guys not play well today that usually do. That's part of it for sure. Yeah, I guess you can say they lost by 8 points, but I mean, Clemson was there for the taking, and like you have to win these kinds of games if you're Notre Dame. Like, it's just like they're a good team. Like, Notre Dame is a good team, but they're not nearly as good as they should be. And that's like, what's a sign of a good coach? You sort of like get the team to play above its talent level a little bit. That didn't happen today. Didn't even come close. So it's got to be a frustrating watch, I think, for the Notre Dame fan base. And I think for like they're every right to be frustrated. If Marcus Freeman had a call-in show, Tyler from Elkhart would be calling into it.
Tyler from Elkhart, aka Chad Bowden or someone on staff who's planting it to fire them up.
Yeah, they just like the Notre Dame fan base has earned the right to be sort of ticked off about this. Because it just feels like this was had a chance to be a special season. That's just obviously not gonna be special.
It's, you know, the old cliche, right? Two steps forward, one step back, or one step forward, two steps back, whatever it is. Like they did so much good against USC. On paper, they did so much good against Pitt that you feel good about yourselves. And if you're a fan, you feel good about the direction of this program, putting that calamitous loss at Louisville behind you. Mm-hmm. And again, that part of that factored into my kind of like temp check for this game, as far as I just thought this was a dangerous spot to be in. Again, I thought Clemson would play better than they played, and Clemson did not play that great. They turned the ball over twice.
I was with you.
They did nothing on offense.
I was talking to another reporter in the press box, and I was like, I'm pretty sure Notre Dame's going to win today, but I just don't trust the offense. And then when you saw Clemson's injury report, you're like, well, there's almost no way they can lose this. It didn't make a difference.
Notre Dame can't move the ball with this secondary, you know, half of whom weren't even on the two deep on Monday.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? But it's disappointing. There's no other way to put it. It's you're waiting for that. Again, I wouldn't have called this a signature win if they got it, but you're waiting for like one of those, like they've shown peaks and valleys, Marcus Freeman, right? Whether it was Clemson last year, USC this year, coming off a loss, you're waiting for one of those games. And I thought there was the opportunity today in any fashion, so long as they won, where it's like, okay, we're finally over that like little hump of like,
yeah,
no one's going to question if we know what we're doing anymore. So
yeah, they had to show they could handle success today. Yes. And they didn't even come close.
Like, I just don't, if you're a fan and you watch that, you're just like, all right, what's it going to take? Like,
yeah,
we played our A game for 59 minutes against Ohio State. Like, we're good enough.
It's there. I mean, yeah, it's be one thing like last year's team, which is whose record it may be identical in the end to this year's team. You just knew they didn't have an A game.
Sure.
Like they were a B minus team at best.
And that does not excuse two of those losses.
No, ever. It doesn't. But it's just like there was never
with B minus like, team with a coach who never coached was a head coach before.
The Ohio State game last year was like, well, they're holding on for dear life. I understand the plan. I understand why they're trying to play it this way, but they're holding on for dear life because this team does not have an A game in it. Then lo and behold, like I guess the Clemson game sort of was an A game, like, but it had to be block punt, like in this, and I thought this team would be able to sort of stand on its own two feet offensively way more than it has. It still need, instead of block punts, it's Xavier Watts. I thought this team would have moved on from that by now. And just, you know, if you keep seeing time and time again, they go on the road, you don't know where you're going to get good, bad, and snap
penalties on the first drive.
Yeah.
Not as bad, but they happen again.
Yeah. It's like this game, I think I said this on our podcast midweek, like, if Notre Dame had won, it would not have been a national statement in any way, but it would have been a really important statement for like Notre Dame to itself.
Yes.
And they ended up making a statement anyway. It just confirmed probably some of Freeman's concerns that he already had going into, like, they're just not equipped to handle success or play good offense against a good defense on the road. And that's, I think there's got to be some soul searching after a game like this. Not this week, not next week.
You got time. You got to buy now.
Yeah, you can think about it, I guess. But it's this feels like a game that will make the decision for you in the offseason.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what you're going to do against Wake Forest or Stanford to be like, we've figured it out.
Right.
Because then the quarterback leaves. Then your left tackle probably leaves. Your running back probably leaves. You're starting over next year. So it just puts Notre Dame in a tough spot.
It's funny, like, as you were just saying that, I was thinking of Ian Williams on our show last week, where he's like, just do your job. It's not that hard. And I'm like, okay, if you say so, buddy, you know more than I do. But they didn't do it today.
No, they didn't. So that was, it felt like, you know, if the air sort of went out against Ohio State, then the playoff hopes went away against Louisville. Today was sort of the end of, like, grasping at something that was going to be like, oh, you feel good about this.
No longer a special season. Like, I hate to put it bluntly and maybe darkly, but like,
it's not.
You can't go from, what was it, 5 straight double digit win seasons to back to back non 10 win regular seasons. They have a chance to get 10 in a bowl game here, but it's disappointing. I mean, when you look at the highs of, and look, this is not unique to Notre Dame. There are a lot of good football teams out there that come in with high expectations every year and lay an egg and things go.
Notre Dame beat one a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, correct. And it's still really tough to think about even Ireland. And I know that was just Navy, but it's like, man, they got a quarterback now. Like,
yes.
They got some dudes on offense. Man, NC State, that was supposed to be a tough game. They just wiped them off the floor. Like game day, everything's here for Ohio State. Like, you play up to that stage and environment and look like you belong on it for the first time in God knows how long, right? I mean, 2020 Clemson regular season, but it's a little different when the fans aren't there as far as just commanding the world's attention. And it's just to see where they were then versus where they are now. It's disappointing. It is. I mean, yeah, Louisville was disappointing for other reasons. They come out and play the way they did against USC, and they give Hartman and Freeman the kind of field storm slash chin in their names, mosh pit, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, you know, I do think, again, low bar to clear here when you look at some of the guys who have been in the seat before, but Marcus Freeman gets the public benefit of the doubt here from the fan base more than a lot of coaches will have and would, because he seems to actually give a damn about the place.
Yeah.
And he's said and done all the right things, and he's the perfect coach 9 months of the year, and he's making an honest effort to elevate the recruiting operation, and he's very fan friendly. There's not a guy who's gotten turned down for a selfie from him wherever. Like, everyone really, really, really wants him to succeed. And I don't think that's the case. It's not been the case at Notre Dame.
No.
At least Blue Holtz. And it's not the case at a lot of places in this country. It is the case here. But then there's a performance like this every couple weeks or so where you're just like, like, get it together, man. Yeah. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, wanting him to succeed because he gets Notre Dame and embraces Notre Dame and embraces the fan base, like, that only gets you so far. He's got to grow as a head coach. And I think after 10 games this year, we will see what kind of growth he has once December and January roll around, because those are going to be big decisions to make for him. He made a big decision last offseason after not taking a quarterback, then going to get Hartman. That was a big decision.
We mentioned this here and there, and I don't think we can overstress his points. He's a higher strength coach. That's going to be the biggest hire.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
The biggest hire every coach makes, and he didn't get to make it last time, and now he's without one. He's a higher strength coach.
That's a good point as well. That should not be overlooked. So he's got, I mean, the two biggest hires. I mean, this is the reason why he was set up for some success early, I felt, at least, like, because he inherited a really good OC and a really good strength coach. And for a defensive head coach, those are the two things he probably
part of why they hired him,
least about.
If Tommy Reese
made his candidacy as a head coach very viable.
If Tommy Reese went with Brian Kelly, who he's facing as we speak, to LSU, which was very close to happening, you know, that's maybe one of the greatest what ifs in Notre Dame football history, because who's the head coach then? I'm not saying it wouldn't be Freeman, but it would have been a real national process, which it wasn't, because it was done in 72 hours. And once Reese and Bayless were on board, you know, it was Freeman's job to lose. But those are two key spots that they got to get right here. And part of why I thought, again, I thought he should have gotten the job, but I just thought the whole like inheriting or like you're our guy under these conditions. I just think that's a faulty way. It's like recruiting for committing to a position coach. He's not going to be there all 4 years you're in college. Like that's not a reason to commit. I think it was a little short-sighted as far as process, because Reese almost left for Miami right after that, and he ended up leaving after 1 year to Alabama, and Bayless is not there now. So,
yeah, those are all fair points. There's a lot of process questions,
yes,
which this humble podcast will be addressing ad nauseum over the next 4 to 6 months.
Our first offseason on the Independent, Pete. What are we going to do about it?
Whoa, my good. I don't know. I feel like it certainly won't, we won't be having multiple podcasts per day like we did 2 years ago.
Let's hope not.
After this game, good God. That would be bad. But yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. Bigger picture, there was a lot to unpack from the game today. We tried to do a little bit of both here as we pushed 55 minutes on this podcast. But if you have any, if you don't have anything else, I don't have anything else. We can wrap it up there. Good?
I'm tapped out. We'll have more this week. We'll have a guest midweek on the bye week, and then yeah. So we'll
might
talk
be more eager to join us now after Saturday.
What's that?
Eric McLean might be more eager to join us if he
can. The minute the game went final, I got a smiley emoji text from him. So I think that means he's in. Eric, right. I asked Eric McLean, who was on our old podcast after multiple Notre Dame Clemson games, hey, do you want to join us after this one? And I couldn't tell whether he's kidding or not, but he texted back. Only if Clemson wins. I'm tired of talking about this team after a loss all the time, which unfortunately in his day job right now, he's done quite a bit this year.
That may be a good guess, because like he was around Clemson when Clemson was kind of muddling through early era.
BYOG. He was on that team.
Yeah, exactly.
They went from BYOG to what was it? If you're buying stock by stock in Clemson right now, is that what Devo said? I tweeted that. There are some great replies. One was like, some of us lost our mortgages by buying stock on you guys over the last couple of years.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, we will wrap up this episode of the Independent after Notre Dame's 31-23 loss at Clemson. If you like the show, please subscribe. We're available on Apple, Spotify, YouTube. If you want to watch video of the show, you can do it there. We appreciate all the subscribes, the likes, the reviews. It helps with the visibility of the show. More people find out about the podcast. So until midweek next week, I don't know if a bye comes at a good time. Maybe it does. He's Matt. I'm Pete. You've been listening to the latest episode of The Independent.